a definite and fixed position. As definitely and inevitably as a particle of water exposed to the cold assumes the well-known form of a snow crystal, did each newcomer on his arrival at the watering place immediately settle into his natural position. Furcht Schabatsky samt Gemahlin und Tochter, by the premises they occupied, by their name, and by the people they were acquainted with, at once crystallized into their definite and preordained place. There was a real German Furstin at the watering place that season, and consequently the crystallizing process was accomplished with special energy. Princess Scherbatskaya particularly wished to introduce her daughter to the German royal princess, and on the second day after their arrival performed that rite. Kitty made a low and graceful curtsy in her very simple dress, that is to say, very stylish summer gown ordered from Paris. The royal princess said, "I hope the roses will soon return to this pretty little face," and at once a definite path was firmly established for the Scherbatskys from which it was impossible to deviate. They made acquaintance with the family of an English lady, with a German countess and her son who had been wounded in the last war, with a Swedish savant, and with a Mr. Canut and his sister. But the people with whom they necessarily associated most were a Moscow lady, Maria Evgenievna Artisheva, and her daughter, whom Kitty found unpleasant because her illness was due to the same cause as Kitty's, a love affair, and a Moscow colonel, whom Kitty from childhood had seen and known in uniform with epaulettes, and who here, with his small eyes, low collar and coloured necktie, looked indescribably comical, and was also wearisome because it was impossible to get rid of him. When all this had become firmly established, Kitty began to feel very dull, especially as her father had gone to Carlsbad and she was left alone with her mother. She was not interested in the people she knew, for she felt that nothing new would come from them. Her chief private interest at the watering place consisted in observing those whom she did not know and making conjectures about them. It was a characteristic of Kitty's always to expect to find the most excellent qualities in people, especially in those she did not know. And now, when guessing who and what kind of people the strangers were, and in what relation they stood to one another, Kitty attributed to them extraordinary and splendid characters, and found confirmation in her observations. Among these people, she was specially interested in a young Russian girl who had come to the watering place with an invalid Russian lady, Madame Stahl, as everyone called her. Madame Stahl belonged to the highest society, but she was so ill that she could not walk, and only on fine days occasionally appeared on the promenade in a bath chair. But, not so much from illness as from pride, as the Princess Scherbatskaya explained, Madame Stahl was not acquainted with any of the Russians there. The Russian girl looked after Madame Stahl and also, as Kitty noticed, became intimate with all those who were seriously ill, of whom there were many in the place, and waited on them in the most natural way. This Russian girl, Kitty decided, was not related to Madame Stahl, but neither was she a paid companion. Madame Stahl called her by the diminutive Varenka, and others called her Mamselle Varenka. But besides the fact that it interested Kitty to observe the relations of this girl with Madame Stahl and with others, she experienced, as often happens, an inexplicable attraction toward this Mamselle Varenka, and felt, when the girl's eyes met hers, that the feeling was mutual. This Mamselle Varenka was not exactly past her early youth, but seemed to be a person destitute of youthfulness. She might be 19 years old, or she might be 30. If one examined her features, she was good-looking rather than plain, despite her unhealthy complexion. Her figure would have been good had she not been too lean and her head too large for her medium height, but she was not likely to prove attractive to men. She was like a beautiful flower which, though not yet in full bloom, is already beginning to fade and has no scent. Another reason why she could not be attractive to men was because she lacked that of which Kitty had too much— a restrained flame of vitality and consciousness of her own attractiveness. She seemed always occupied with something there could be no doubt about, and therefore it seemed that no side issue could interest her. By this contrast to herself, Kitty was specially attracted. She felt that in her and in her way of life could be found a model of what she herself was painfully seeking. Interest in life, the worth of life, outside the social relations of girls to men, which now seemed disgusting to Kitty, who regarded them as shameful exhibitions of goods awaiting a buyer. The more Kitty observed her unknown friend, the more she was convinced that this girl really was the perfect being she imagined her to be, and the more she wished to make her acquaintance. The two girls came across one another several times a day, and every time they met, Kitty's eyes said, "Who are you? What are you? Surely you are the delightful creature I imagine you to be." "But for heaven's sake," her look added, "do not think that I shall force myself on you. I simply admire and love you." "I too love you, and you are very, very sweet. I should love you still more if I had the time," the stranger's look replied. And Kitty saw that the girl really was always occupied, now taking the children of some Russian family home from the wells, now carrying an invalid's plaid or wrapping it round her, now trying to soothe an irritable patient, now choosing and buying biscuits for someone's coffee. Soon after the Shabatskys' arrival, two new persons who provoked everybody's disapproval began to appear of a morning at the wells. They were a very tall, round-shouldered man with black eyes, naive and at the same time dreadful, and enormous hands, who wore an old overcoat too short for him, and a slightly pockmarked, sweet-faced woman, badly and tastelessly dressed. Having recognized them to be Russians, Kitty at once began to make up a beautiful and touching romance about them. But the princess, having found out from the visitors' list that they were Nikolai Levin and Maria Ivanovna, explained to Kitty what a bad man this Levin was, and all her dreams about those two people vanished. Not so much because of what her mother had told her, as because the man was Konstantin's brother, these two people appeared very disagreeable to Kitty. This Levin, by his habit of jerking his head, now inspired an irrepressible feeling of aversion in her. It seemed to her that his large, dreadful eyes, which followed her insistently, expressed hatred and irony, and she tried to avoid encountering him. Chapter 31. It was a dull day. It rained the whole morning, and the patients with their umbrellas crowded the covered gallery. Kitty was walking with her mother and the Moscow colonel, who swaggered gaily in his short German coat bought ready-made in Frankfurt. They kept to one side of the gallery, trying to avoid Levin, who was walking on the other side. Varenka, in her dark dress and a black hat with turned-down rim, was pacing the whole length of the gallery with a blind Frenchwoman, and each time she met Kitty they exchanged a friendly look. "Mama, may I speak to her?" asked Kitty, following her unknown friend with her eyes and noticing that she was moving toward the well and that they could meet her there. "Well, if you want so much, I will inquire about her first and will speak to her myself," answered her mother. "What do you see particular in her? I expect she's a companion. If you like, I will make Madame Stahl's acquaintance. I knew her sister-in-law," added the princess, raising her head proudly. Kitty knew that her mother was offended that Madame Stahl seemed to avoid making her acquaintance. Kitty did not insist. "She is wonderfully sweet," she said, looking at Varenka, who was handing a tumbler to the Frenchwoman. "See how naturally and sweetly she does it." "How absurd your infatuations are," said the princess. "Come, we'd better turn back," she added, as she noticed Levin coming toward them with his lady and a German doctor to whom he was talking loudly and angrily. They were just turning to go back when they suddenly heard voices not merely loud, but shouting. Levin had stopped and was shouting, and the doctor was also excited. A crowd collected about them. The princess and Kitty withdrew hurriedly, but the colonel joined the crowd to find out what the noise was all about. In a few minutes he overtook Kitty and her mother. "What was the matter?" asked the princess.
"It's shameful and scandalous," replied the colonel. "The one thing to fear is meeting Russians abroad. That tall gentleman has been quarrelling with the doctor and insulting him because he's dissatisfied with the doctor's treatment. He shook his stick at him. It's simply shameful."
"Ah, how unpleasant," said the princess. "But how did it all end?"
"Luckily that, you know, the girl with her hat like a mushroom, she's Russian, I think, intervened," said the colonel.
"Mademoiselle Varenka?" asked Kitty in a pleased tone.
"Yes, yes. She knew what to do before anyone else. She took that fellow by the arm and led him away."
"There, Mama," said Kitty. "And you were surprised that I admire her?" The next day, watching her unknown friend, Kitty noticed that she was already on the same footing with Lievin and his young woman as she was with her other protégés. She went up to them, talked to them, and acted as interpreter for the woman who spoke nothing but Russian. Kitty begged her mother more than ever to allow her to make Varenka's acquaintance, and much as the princess disliked appearing to take the first step toward getting acquainted with Madame Stahl, who allowed herself to be proud of something or other, she made inquiries about Varenka, and having learnt particulars which allowed her to conclude that though there might be little good, there would be no harm in this acquaintance, she herself approached Varenka. Choosing a moment when her daughter had gone to the well and Varenka had stopped in front of a baker's shop, the princess went up to her. "Allow me to introduce myself," said the princess with her dignified smile. "My daughter has fallen in love with you. Perhaps you don't know me. I—"
"It is more than mutual, princess," replied Varenka hurriedly.
"What a good action you performed yesterday for our unfortunate fellow countryman," said the princess.
Varenka blushed.
"I don't remember.
I don't think I did anything," she said.
"Oh, yes. You saved that Lievin from unpleasantness."
"Well, you see, his companion called me, and I tried to soothe him. He is very ill and was dissatisfied with his doctor. I am used to looking after invalids of that kind."
"Oh, yes, I have heard that you live in Montone with your aunt, I think, Madame Stahl. I knew her sister-in-law."
"No, she is not my aunt. I call her Mama, but I'm not related to her. She adopted me," answered Varenka, and blushed again. This was said so simply, and the frank and open expression of her face was so amiable, that the princess understood what made Kitty so fond of this Varenka.
"Well, and what about that Lievin?"
"He is leaving," answered Varenka.
Just then Kitty, beaming with joy that her mother had made acquaintance with her unknown friend, returned from the well.
"There, Kitty, your great wish to make acquaintance with Mademoiselle Varenka," prompted Varenka with a smile. "Everybody calls me so."
Kitty blushed with joy, long and silently pressing her new friend's hand, which lay passively in hers. But though her hand did not return the pressure, Mademoiselle Varenka's face shone with a soft and pleased, though rather sad, smile, which disclosed her large but splendid teeth.
"I have long wished it myself," she said.
"But you are so busy."
"Oh, on the contrary, I have no occupation at all," answered Varenka.
But at that very moment she had to leave her new friends because two little Russian girls, the children of one of the invalids, ran up to her.
"Varenka, Mama wants you,"
they shouted. And Varenka went with them.
Chapter 32 The particulars the Princess Shcherbatskaya learnt about Varenka's past and about her relations with Madame Stahl and about Madame Stahl herself were the following. Madame Stahl, of whom some people said that she had tormented her husband to death, while others said that by his immoral conduct he had tormented her, had always been a sickly and ecstatic woman. When her first baby was born, she being already divorced from her husband, it died at once, and her relations, knowing how susceptible she was and fearing that this news might kill her, changed her dead child for one who had been born that night in the same house in Petersburg, the daughter of a chef at a palace. That child was Varenka. Madame Stahl learnt afterwards that Varenka was not her daughter, but continued to bring her up, the more readily because it happened that very soon Varenka had no relations left. Madame Stahl had lived continuously abroad in the South for more than 10 years, hardly ever leaving her bed. Some people said that she had made for herself a position in society by her pose as a philanthropic and highly religious woman. Others said that she really was the highly moral being, living only to do good, that she seemed to be. No one knew what her religion was, Roman Catholic, Protestant, or Greek Orthodox, but one thing was certain, namely that she was in friendly relations with the most highly placed personages of all the churches and denominations. Varenka always lived with her abroad, and all who knew Madame Stahl knew and liked Mademoiselle Varenka, as everybody called her. Having learnt all these particulars, the princess saw nothing to object to in a friendship between her daughter and Varenka, especially as Varenka's manners and education were excellent. She spoke French and English admirably, and above all she brought Madame Stahl's regrets at having been deprived through illness of the pleasure of making the princess's acquaintance. When she had made Varenka's acquaintance, Kitty became more and more fascinated by her friend and found new virtues in her every day. The princess, having heard that Varenka sang very well, invited her to come and sing to them one evening. "Kitty plays, and we have a piano, though not a good one, and you would give us great pleasure," said the princess with her feigned smile, which was especially unpleasant to Kitty now because she noticed that Varenka did not wish to sing. Varenka, however, came in the evening and brought her music. The princess had also invited Maria Evgenievna with her daughter and the colonel. Varenka did not seem at all abashed by the fact that strangers were present, and she went straight up to the piano. She could not accompany herself, but she sang at sight admirably. Kitty, who played well, accompanied her. "You have an exceptional talent," said the princess after Varenka had sung her first song excellently. Maria Evgenievna and her daughter thanked her and praised her singing.
"See?" said the colonel, looking out of the window. "What an audience has assembled to hear you!"
Underneath the window a considerable crowd really had collected. "I am very glad it gives you pleasure," said Varenka, simply. Kitty looked at her friend with pride. She was enraptured by her singing, her voice, her face, and above all by her manner, by the fact that Varenka evidently attached no importance to her own singing and was quite indifferent to the praise she got. She only seemed to ask, "Have I to sing again, or is it enough?" "If it were I," thought Kitty, "how proud I should feel. How glad I should be to see that crowd under the windows. But she's quite indifferent. She only wished not to refuse and to give Mama pleasure. What is it in her? What gives her this power to disregard everything and to be so quietly independent? How I should like to know this, and to learn it from her," thought Kitty, gazing into the calm face. The princess asked Varenka to sing again, and she sang another song just as truly, clearly, and well, standing straight at the piano and beating time on it with her thin, brown hand. The next piece in the music book was an Italian song. Kitty played the prelude and looked round at Varenka. "Let us skip this one," said Varenka, blushing. Kitty anxiously and inquiringly fixed her eyes on Varenka's face. "Well, then another one," she said, hurriedly turning over the pages, immediately realizing that there was something particular connected with that song. "No," answered Varenka, putting her hand on the music and smiling. "No, let us sing that one." And she sang the piece just as calmly, coldly, and well as the previous ones. When she had finished, everybody again thanked her and went to drink tea. But Kitty and Varenka went out into the little garden belonging to the house. "Am I not right you have some memory attached to that song?" asked Kitty. "Don't
Tell me about it, she added hurriedly. Only say if I'm right. Why not? I will tell you, said Varenka simply, and without waiting for a reply, continued, Yes, there is a memory attached to it, and it was painful once. I loved a man and used to sing that song to him. Kitty, deeply moved, gazed silently with wide-open eyes at Varenka. I loved him, and he loved me. But his mother would not have it, and he married another. He lives not far from us now, and I see him sometimes. You did not think that I, too, have had a romance, she said. And on her handsome face there flickered for an instant a spark of the fire which, Kitty felt, at once lighted up her whole being.
I not think it? Why, if I were a man, I could not have loved anyone else after knowing you. But I can't understand how, to satisfy his mother, he could forget you and make you unhappy. He must be quite heartless. Oh, no, he's a very good man, and I am not unhappy. On the contrary, I am very happy. Well, we shan't sing any more today, she added, and went toward the house.
How good you are! How good! "'Good!'
exclaimed Kitty, stopping her and kissing her.
"'If only I could be a little bit like you!'
"'Why should you be like anyone? "'You're very good as you are,' said Varenka, "'smiling her gentle, weary smile. "'No, I am not at all good.
"'But tell me—' "'Wait a bit, let us sit down again,' said Kitty, "'making Varenka sit down on a garden seat beside her. Tell me, is it possible that you are not offended at the thought that a man despised your love? That he did not wish,
but he did not despise it. I believed that he loved me, but he was an obedient son.
Yes, but if it had not been his mother's doing, but his own, said Kitty, feeling that she had given away her secret and that her face, burning with a blush of shame, had already betrayed her.
Then he would have behaved badly, and I should not regret him, replied Varenka, evidently conscious that they were now speaking not about her, but about Kitty.
But the humiliation, said Kitty. One cannot forget the humiliation. One cannot.
And she remembered the look she gave Vronsky at the ball when the music stopped.
Where is the humiliation? You did not do anything wrong.
Worse than wrong. Shameful. Varenka shook her head and put her hand on Kitty's.
Shameful in what respect? She said. You could not have told a man who was himself indifferent to you that you loved him.
Of course not. I never said a single word, but he knew it.
No, no. There are such things as looks and ways of behaving.
If I live to be 100, I shall never forget it.
What does it matter?
I don't understand. The question is, do you love him now or not? Said Varenka, calling everything by its plain name.
I hate him, and I cannot forgive myself.
But what does it matter?
The shame, the humiliation.
Dear me, if everyone were as sensitive as you, said Varenka.
There is no girl who has not gone through the same sort of thing, and it is all so unimportant.
Then what is important? Asked Kitty, looking into her face with surprised curiosity.
Ah, many things are important, replied Varenka, not knowing what to say.
But at that moment they heard the princess's voice from the window.
Kitty, it is getting chilly. Either take a shawl or come in.
Yes, I really must be going, said Varenka, rising. I have to look in at Madame Berthe's. She asked me to.
Kitty held her hands and with passionate curiosity and entreaty questioned Varenka with her eyes.
What? What is more important? What gives you such peace? You know. Tell me.
But Varenka did not even understand what Kitty's eyes were asking. She only knew that she had to call on Madame Berthe and get home in time for Mama's midnight tea. She went in, collected her music, and having said good night to everybody, prepared to go.
"Allow me to see you home," said the Colonel.
"Yes, how can you go alone at this time of night?" agreed the Princess. "I will at any rate send Parasha with you."
Kitty noticed that Varenka had difficulty in suppressing a smile at the idea that she needed anyone to see her home.
"Oh, no, I always go out alone, and nothing ever happens to me," she said, taking up her hat.
And kissing Kitty again, but without telling her what was most important, she went out with vigorous steps with her music under her arm and disappeared in the semi-darkness of the summer night, carrying with her the secret of what was important and to what she owed her enviable tranquillity and dignity. Chapter 33 Kitty also became acquainted with Madame Stahl, and this acquaintanceship, together with Varenka's friendship, not only had a great influence on Kitty, but comforted her in her sorrow. What comforted her was that a perfectly new world was revealed to her, a world that had nothing in common with her past, an exalted, admirable world, from the heights of which it was possible to regard that past calmly. It was revealed to her that besides that instinctive life she had lived hitherto, there was also a spiritual life. That life was revealed by religion, but a religion that had nothing in common with that which Kitty had known since her childhood and which found expression in Mass and Vespers at the private chapel of the Widow's Almshouse, where one could meet one's friends, and in learning Slavonic texts by heart with the priest. This was a lofty, mystical religion, connected with a series of beautiful thoughts and feelings, which it was not only possible to believe because one was told to, but even to love. Kitty did not learn all this from words. Madame Stahl spoke with her as with a dear child who gives one pleasure by reminding one of one's own past, and only once mentioned that love and faith alone can bring relief in all human sorrows, and that no sorrows are too trivial for Christ's compassion. Then she immediately changed the subject. But in Madame Stahl's every movement, every word, every heavenly look, as Kitty called it, and especially in the whole story of her life, which Kitty learned from Varenka, she discovered what was important and what she had not known before. But however lofty may have been Madame Stahl's character, however touching her story and however elevated and tender her words, Kitty could not help noticing some perplexing traits in her. She noticed that Madame Stahl, when inquiring about Kitty's relatives, smiled contemptuously, which did not accord with Christian kindness. And once, when Kitty met a Roman Catholic priest at the house, she observed that Madame Stahl carefully hid her face behind the lampshade and smiled in a peculiar manner. Trifling as these things were, they disturbed Kitty, and she felt doubts about Madame Stahl. But Varenka, lonely, without relatives or friends, with her sad disillusionment, wishing for nothing and regretting nothing, personified that perfection of which Kitty only allowed herself to dream. In Varenka she saw that it was only necessary to forget oneself and to love others in order to be at peace, happy and lovely. And such a person Kitty wished to be. Having now clearly understood what was most important, Kitty was not content merely to delight in it, but immediately with her whole soul devoted herself to this newly revealed life. She formed a plan for her future life based on what Varenka told her about the work of Madame Stahl and of others whom she named. Like Madame Stahl's niece, Arline, of whom Varenka told her a great deal, Kitty determined, wherever she lived, to seek out the unfortunate, help them as much as she could, distribute gospels, and read the gospel to the sick, to criminals, and to the dying. The idea of reading the Gospels to criminals, as Arline did, charmed Kitty particularly.
But all these were secret dreams which she did not speak of either to her mother or to Varenka. However, while waiting for the time when she could put her plans into operation on a larger scale, Kitty, imitating Varenka, here at the watering place where there were so many sick and unhappy people, easily found opportunities to apply her new rules. At first, the princess only noticed that Kitty was strongly influenced by her engouement, as she called it, for Madame Stahl, and especially for Varenka. She noticed that Kitty not only imitated Varenka's activities, but involuntarily copied her manner of walking, speaking, and blinking her eyes. But afterwards, the princess also noticed that, apart from this infatuation, a serious spiritual change was taking place in her daughter. She saw that in the evening Kitty read the Gospels in French, given her by Madame Stahl, which she had not done before, that she avoided her society acquaintances and made up to the invalids who were under Varenka's protection, and especially to the family of Petrov, a poor, sick artist. Kitty evidently prided herself on fulfilling the duties of a sister of mercy in that family. This was all very well, and the princess had nothing against it, especially as Petrov's wife was quite a well-bred woman, and the German princess, having noticed Kitty's activities, praised her, calling her a ministering angel. It would have been quite right had it not been overdone. But the princess saw that her daughter was getting out of bounds and spoke to her about it. "Il ne faut jamais rien outre," she said to her one day. But her daughter did not reply. She only felt in her soul that one could not speak of overdoing Christianity. How was it possible to exaggerate when following the teaching which bids us turn the other cheek when we are struck and give our coat when our cloak is taken? But the princess disliked this excess, and disliked it all the more because she felt that Kitty did not wish to open her whole heart to her. And Kitty really did hide her new views and feelings from her mother. She kept them secret not from want of respect and love, but just because her mother was her mother. She would have revealed them to anyone sooner than to her. "It seems a long time since Anna Pavlovna was here," said the princess once, speaking of Mrs. Petrova. "I invited her, and she did not seem pleased." "I did not notice anything, Mama," said Kitty, flushing up. "Is it long since you went to see them?" "We are all arranging to go for a drive up the mountains tomorrow," replied Kitty. "Well, go if you like," said the princess, looking intently into her daughter's confused face and trying to guess the cause of her confusion. That same day Varenka came to dinner and said that Anna Pavlovna had changed her mind about going to the mountains tomorrow. The princess noticed that Kitty blushed again. "Kitty, have you not had some unpleasantness with the Petrovs?" the princess asked when they were again alone together. "Why has she stopped sending the children here, and coming herself?" Kitty replied that nothing had passed between them, and that she did not at all understand why Anna Pavlovna seemed dissatisfied with her. Kitty spoke the truth. She did not know why Anna Pavlovna had changed toward her, but she guessed it. She guessed it to be something that she could not tell her mother and did not even say to herself. It was one of those things which one knows and yet cannot say, even to oneself, so dreadful and shameful would it be to make a mistake. Again and again she went over in memory all the relations she had had with that family. She remembered the naive pleasure expressed in Anna Pavlovna's round, good-natured face whenever they met, remembered their secret consultations about the patient, and their plots to draw him away from his work, which the doctor had forbidden, and to take him for walks, and the attachment to her felt by the youngest boy, who called her My Kitty and did not want to go to bed without her. How good it had all been! Then she recalled Petrov's thin, emaciated figure in his brown coat, with his long neck, his thin, curly hair, his inquiring blue eyes, which had at first seemed to her terrible, and his sickly efforts to appear vigorous and animated in her presence. She remembered her first efforts to conquer the repulsion she felt for him, as for all consumptives, and her efforts to find something to say to him. She remembered the timid look,
full of emotion with which he gazed at her, and a strange feeling of compassion and awkwardness, followed by a consciousness of her own benevolence that she had experienced. How good it had all been! But all that had been at first. Now, for some days past, all had suddenly been spoiled. Anna Pavlovna now met Kitty with affected amiability and constantly watched her husband and her. Could his touching pleasure when she drew near be the cause of Anna Pavlovna's coldness? Yes, she remembered. There was something unnatural in Anna Pavlovna, quite unlike her usual kindness when the day before yesterday she said crossly, "There, he has been waiting for you and would not drink his coffee without you, though he was growing dreadfully weak." Yes. And perhaps my giving him his plaid may also have been unpleasant to her. It was such a simple thing, but he took it so awkwardly and thanked me so much that I myself felt awkward. And then that portrait of me, which he did so well. And above all, that look, confused and tender. Yes, yes, it is so, Kitty said to herself, quite horrified, and then, no, it is impossible, it must not be. He is so pathetic.
Chapter 34. Quite toward the end of the season, Prince Shabatsky, who from Carlsbad had gone on to Baden and Kissingen to see some Russian friends and to inhale some Russian spirit, as he expressed it, returned to his family. The views of the prince and princess on life abroad were diametrically opposed. The princess found everything admirable, and in spite of her firmly established position in Russian society, tried when abroad to appear like a European lady, which she was not, being thoroughly Russian. She therefore became somewhat artificial, which made her feel uncomfortable. The prince, on the contrary, considered everything foreign detestable and life abroad oppressive, and kept to his Russian habits, purposely trying to appear more unlike a European than he really was. He returned looking thinner, with the skin on his cheeks hanging loose, but in the brightest of spirits. His spirits were still better when he saw Kitty completely recovered. The news of her friendship with Madame Stahl and Varenka, and the information the princess gave him of the change she had observed in Kitty, disturbed him and aroused in him his usual feelings of jealousy toward anything that drew his daughter away from him, and of fear lest she might escape from his influence into regions inaccessible to him. But these unpleasant rumours were soon drowned in that sea of kind-hearted cheerfulness which was always within him, and which was increased by the Carlsbad water. The day after his arrival, the prince, attired in a long overcoat and with his Russian wrinkles and his slightly puffy cheeks supported by a stiff collar, went out in the brightest of spirits to the springs with his daughter. The morning was lovely. The bright, tidy houses with their little gardens, the sight of the red-faced, red-armed, beer-saturated German housemaids, and the clear sunshine cheered the heart. But the nearer one came to the spring, the more often one met sick people, whose appearance seemed yet sadder amid these customary, well-ordered conditions of German life. Kitty was no longer struck by this contrast. The bright sunshine, the gay glitter of the green trees, and the sounds of music had become for her the natural framework of all these familiar figures, and of the changes for better or for worse which she watched. But to the prince, the radiance of the June morning, the sounds of the band playing a fashionable and merry valse, and particularly the appearance of the sturdy maidservants, seemed improper and monstrous, in contrast with all those melancholy living corpses collected from all parts of Europe. In spite of the pride and the sense of renewed youth which he experienced while walking arm in arm with his favourite daughter, he felt almost awkward and ashamed of his powerful stride and his large, healthy limbs. He had almost the feeling that might be caused by appearing in company without clothes.
"Introduce me. Introduce me to your new friends," he said to his daughter, pressing her arm with his elbow. "I've even taken a liking to your nasty Soden, because it has done you so much good. But it's sad, this place of yours. Very sad." "Who is that?"
Kitty told him the names of the acquaintances and others whom they met. Just at the entrance to the gardens they met the blind Madame Berthe with her guide, and the prince was pleased by the tender look on the old Frenchwoman's face when she heard Kitty's voice. With French exaggeration she at once began talking to him, admiring him for having such a delightful daughter, and in Kitty's presence praised her up to the skies, calling her a treasure, a pearl, and a ministering angel.
"Then she must be angel number two," the prince remarked with a smile. "She calls Mademoiselle Varenka angel number one." "Oh, Mademoiselle Varenka is a real angel, allez," said Madame Berthe.
In the gallery they met Varenka herself. She was walking hurriedly toward them with an elegant little red bag in her hand.
"See, Papa has come," said Kitty to her.
Simply and naturally, as she did everything, Varenka made a movement between a bow and a curtsy, and immediately began talking to the prince just as she talked to everybody, easily and naturally.
"Of course, I know you. I've heard all about you," the prince said to her with a smile, by which Kitty saw with joy that her father liked Varenka. "Where are you hurrying so to?"
"Mama is here," said she, turning to Kitty. "She did not sleep all night, and the doctor advised her to go out. I am taking her her work."
"So, that is angel number one," said the prince when Varenka had gone.
Kitty saw that he would have liked to make fun of Varenka, but was unable to do so because he liked her.
"Well, let us see all your friends," he added, "including Madame Stahl, if she will condescend to recognize me."
"Oh, do you know her, Papa?" asked Kitty,
alarmed by an ironical twinkle in the prince's eyes when he mentioned Madame Stahl.
"I knew her husband, and her, too, slightly, before she joined the Pietists."
"What are Pietists, Papa?" asked Kitty, frightened by the fact that what she valued so highly in Madame Stahl had a name.
"I don't know very well myself. I only know that she thanks God for everything, including all misfortunes, and thanks God for her husband's death. And it seems funny, for they did not get on well together."
"Who is that?"
"What a pitiful face," he said,
noticing an invalid of medium height who sat on a bench in a brown coat and white trousers, which fell into strange folds over his emaciated legs. The man raised his straw hat above his thin, curly hair, uncovering a tall forehead with an unhealthy redness where the hat had pressed it.
"It is Petrov, an artist," Kitty replied, blushing. "And that is his wife," she added, indicating Anna Pavlovna, who, on their approach, went away with apparent intention, following a child who had run along the path.
"Poor man! What a nice face he has," said the prince. "Why did you not go up to him? He looked as if he wished to say something to you."
"Well, come back then," said Kitty, turning resolutely. "How are you today?" she asked Petrov.
Petrov rose with the aid of a stick and looked timidly at the prince.
"This is my daughter," said the prince. "Allow me to introduce myself."
The artist bowed and smiled, exposing his strangely glistening white teeth.
"We were expecting you yesterday, princess," he said to Kitty.
He staggered as he said it, and to make it appear as if he had done this intentionally, he repeated the movement.
"I meant to come, but Varenka told me that Anna Pavlovna sent word that you were not going."
"Not going?"
said Petrov, flushing, and immediately beginning to cough and looking round for his wife.
"Aneta!" Aneta!"
he said loudly, and the veins in his white neck protruded like thick cords. Anna Pavlovna drew near.
"How is it you sent word to the princess that we were not going?"
he said in an irritable whisper, his voice failing him. "Good morning, princess," said Anna Pavlovna with a forced smile, quite unlike her former way of greeting Kitty. "I am very pleased to make your acquaintance," she went on, turning to the prince. "You have long been expected, prince."
"How is it you sent to tell the princess we were not going?"
the painter whispered hoarsely and still more angrily, evidently irritated because his voice failed him and he could not give his words the expression he desired. "Oh, dear me, I thought we were not going," said his wife with vexation.
"How so? When—"
He was interrupted by a fit of coughing and made a hopeless gesture with his hand. The prince raised his hat and went away with his daughter. "Oh, oh," he sighed deeply. "What poor things." "Yes, papa," replied Kitty. "And you know they have three children, no servants, and hardly any means." "He received something from the academy," she explained animatedly, trying to stifle the excitement resulting from the strange alteration in Anna Pavlovna's manner toward her. "And there's Madame Stahl," said Kitty, pointing to a bath chair on which, under a sunshade, lay something supported by pillows wrapped up in grey and pale blue. It was Madame Stahl. Behind her was a sullen-looking, robust German workman who pushed her bath chair. At her side stood a fair-haired Swedish count whom Kitty knew by name. Several patients lingered nearby, gazing at this lady as at something out of the common. The prince approached her, and Kitty immediately noticed in his eyes that ironical spark which so disturbed her. He went up to Madame Stahl and spoke to her extremely politely and nicely in that excellent French which so very few people speak nowadays. "I do not know whether you will remember me, but I must recall myself to you in order to thank you for your kindness to my daughter," he said, raising his hat and not putting it on again. "Prince Alexander Shcherbatsky," said Madame Stahl, lifting toward him her heavenly eyes, in which Kitty detected displeasure. "I am very pleased. I have grown very fond of your daughter."
"Your health is still not good?"
"No, but I am accustomed to it," said Madame Stahl, and introduced the Swedish count to the prince.
"You are very little changed," said the prince. "I have not had the honour of seeing you for 10 or 11 years.
"Yes, God sends a cross and gives the strength to bear it. It often seems strange to think why this life should drag on." "On that side," she said irritably to Varenka, who was not wrapping the plaid round her feet the right way.
"To do good, probably," said the prince, whose eyes were laughing.
"That is not for us to judge," said Madame Stahl, detecting a something hardly perceptible on the prince's face. "Then you will send me that book, dear Count? Thank you very much," she added, turning to the young Swede.
"Ah!" exclaimed the prince, seeing the Moscow colonel standing nearby, and with a bow to Madame Stahl he moved away with his daughter and with the Moscow colonel who had joined them.
"That is our aristocracy, prince," remarked the colonel, wishing to appear sarcastic.
He had a pique against Madame Stahl because she did not wish to be acquainted with him.
"Always the same," answered the prince.
"Did you know her before her illness, prince? I mean, before she was laid up?"
"Yes, I knew her when she first became an invalid."
"I hear she's not been up for 10 years.
"She does not get up because her legs are too short. She has a very bad figure."
"Papa, impossible!" exclaimed Kitty.
"Evil tongues say so, my love. But your Varenka does get it," he added. "Oh, those invalid ladies!"
"Oh, no, Papa," Kitty objected warmly. "Varenka adores her. And besides, she does so much good. Ask anyone you like. Everybody knows her and Arlene Stahl."
"Perhaps," he said, pressing her arm with his elbow. "But it is better to do good so that, ask whom you will, no one knows anything about it."
Kitty was silent, not because she had nothing to say, but because she did not want to reveal her secret thoughts, even to her father. Yet, strange to say, though she had made up her mind not to submit to her father's opinion and not to let him enter her sanctuary, she felt that the divine image of Madame Stahl, which she had carried in her bosom for a whole month, had irrevocably vanished, as the figure formed by a cast-off garment vanishes when one realizes how the garment is lying. There remained only a short-legged woman who was always lying down because she had a bad figure, and who tormented poor, unresisting Varenka for not tucking her plaid the right way. And by no efforts of imagination could the former Madame Stahl be recalled.
Chapter 35. The prince imparted his good spirits to his household, his friends, and even to his German landlord. On returning from the spring with Kitty, the prince, who had invited the colonel, Maria Yevgenyevna, and Varenka to come and take coffee, had a table and chairs brought out into the garden under a chestnut tree, and breakfast laid there. The landlord and the servants brightened up under his influence. They knew his generosity, and in a quarter of an hour the sick Hamburg doctor who lived upstairs was looking with envy from his window at the merry party of healthy Russians gathered under the chestnut tree. Beneath the trembling shadow circles of the leaves, around a table covered with a white cloth and set out with coffee pot, bread, butter, cheese, and cold game, sat the princess in a cap with lilac ribbons, handing out cups of coffee and sandwiches. At the other end sat the prince, making a substantial meal and talking loudly and merrily. He spread out his purchases before him, carved caskets, spillikins, and paper knives of all kinds, of which he had bought quantities at all the different watering places, and he gave them away to everybody, including Lishkin, the maid, and the landlord, with whom he joked in his funny, broken German, assuring him that not the waters had cured Kitty, but his excellent food, especially his plum soup. The princess laughed at her husband for his Russian ways, but was livelier and brighter than she had ever been during her stay at the watering place. The colonel smiled, as he always did at the prince's jokes, but with regard to Europe, which he thought he had carefully studied, he sided with the princess. The good-natured Maria Yevgenyevna shook with laughter at everything the amusing prince said, and even Varenka, in a way new to Kitty, succumbed to the feeble but infectious laughter inspired by the prince's jokes. All this cheered Kitty up, but she could not help being troubled. She could not solve the problem unconsciously set her by her father's jocular view of her friends and of the life she had begun to love so much. To this problem was added the change in her relations with the Petrovs, which had been so clearly and unpleasantly demonstrated that morning. Everybody was merry, but Kitty could not be merry, and this troubled her still more. She felt almost as she used to feel when, as a child, she was locked up in a room for punishment and heard her sister's merry laughter.
"Now, why have you bought that mass of things?" asked the princess, smiling and passing her husband a cup of coffee.
"One goes out walking, comes to a shop, and they ask one to buy something. It's Erlaucht, Excellence, Durchlaucht. Well, by the time they get to Durchlaucht, I can't resist, and 10 thalers are gone." "That's all because you are bored," said the princess. "Bored? Of course I am. The time hangs so heavy, my dear, that one does not know what to do with oneself." "How can you be bored, prince? There is so much that is interesting in Germany now," said Maria Yevgenyevna. "But I know all your interesting things. Plum soup and pea sausages. I know them. I know it all."
No, say what you please, Prince. Their institutions are interesting, said the Colonel. What is there interesting about them? They're as self-satisfied as brass farthings. They've conquered everybody. Now, tell me, what am I to be pleased about? I have not conquered anybody, but here I have to take off my own boots and even put them outside the door myself. In the morning I have to get up and dress at once and go down to the dining room to drink bad tea. Is it like that at home? There, one wakes up without any hurry, gets a bit cross about something, grumbles a bit, comes well to one's senses and thinks everything well over without hurrying. But time is money. Don't forget that, said the Colonel. It all depends on what time. There are times when one would give a whole month for a shilling, and there are times when you would not give half an hour at any price. Is not that so, Kitty? Why are you so glum?
I'm all right.
Where are you off to? Stay a little longer, he said, turning to Varenka.
I must get home, said Varenka, rising and bursting into another fit of laughter. When she had recovered, she took leave and went into the house for her hat. Kitty followed her. Even Varenka seemed different now. She was not worse, but different from what Kitty previously had imagined her to be.
Oh, dear, I have not laughed so much for a long time, said Varenka, collecting her sunshade and bag.
What a dear your papa is.
Kitty remained silent.
When shall we meet?
Asked Varenka.
Mama was going to call on the Petrovs.
Will you be there? Asked Kitty, trying to sound Varenka.
I will, answered Varenka. They are preparing to leave, so I have promised to help them pack.
Then I'll come too.
No, why should you?
Why not? Why not? Why not? Asked Kitty with wide-open eyes, and holding Varenka's sunshade to prevent her going.
No, wait a bit. Tell me why not.
Oh, nothing. Only your papa has returned, and they don't feel at ease with you.
No, no, tell me why you do not wish me to be often at the Petrovs. You don't, do you?
Why?
I have not said so, replied Varenka, quietly. No, please tell me.
Shall I tell you everything? Said Varenka.
Everything, everything, said Kitty.
There is nothing special to tell, only Petrov used to want to leave sooner, but now does not want to go, said Varenka, smiling.
Well, go on,
Kitty hurried her, looking at her with a frown.
Well, I don't know why, but Anna Pavlovna says he does not want to go because you are here. Of course that was tactless, but they quarrelled about you. And you know how excitable such invalids are.
Kitty frowned yet more and remained silent, and only Varenka spoke, trying to soften and soothe Kitty, and foreseeing an approaching explosion of tears or words she knew not which.
So it is better for you not to go. And, you understand, don't be hurt.
It serves me right. It serves me right, Kitty began hurriedly, snatching Varenka's sunshade out of her hands and looking past her friend's eyes. Varenka felt like smiling at her friend's childish anger, but feared to offend her.
Why serves you right? I don't understand, she said.
It serves me right because it was all pretense, all invented and not heartfelt.
What business had I with a stranger?
So it comes about that I am the cause of a quarrel and have been doing what nobody asked me to do, because it is all pretense, pretense, and pretense.
But what motive had you for pretending? Said Varenka, softly. How stupid. How stupid. There was no need at all. It was all pretense, Kitty said, opening and shutting the sunshade. But with what object?
To appear better than others to myself and to God. To deceive everybody. No, I shall not give in to that again. Let me be bad, but at any rate not false, not a humbug.
But who is a humbug? Asked Varenka reproachfully. You speak as if
But Kitty was in one of her fits of passion. She would not let Varenka finish.
Oh, I'm not talking about you, not about you at all. You are perfection. Yes, yes, you are all